we continue our series now looking at affordable housing. It's a term that means different things to different people, but as prices in and near the city continue to increase, affordable housing is becoming harder to come by for most everyone.
Well, you might remember on Monday's show, Jim profiled a new home development called Mechanicsville Cityside. Now, this is a public-private partnership that offers lower-income families a chance to own their own home. And the homes are anything but low-end, if some consider that to be what an affordable housing is. The developer told Closer Look each home cost about $240,000. Well, get this. In 15 years, he estimated they'll be worth about $400,000. Now, get this. The family that's been renting the home can buy the property for about $130,000. Pretty good deal.
Now, if that sounds like funny math to you, take a listen to our next guest. Jim Grawley is the president and chief operating officer of Columbia Residential. It's the private developer behind the Mechanicsville Cityside project, and Jim is here to explain how all of this works. First, welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And the bottom line is projects like Mechanicsville Cityside are only possible because of tax breaks. And we hear a term like tax break, it really doesn't mean that much just hearing it. So give us a scope of what those breaks are and what they really mean.
Sure. Well, Mechanicsville Cityside is one of a number of developments that we have in Metro Atlanta in recent years. And there's a wide variety of products. We build for families, for seniors, for persons with disabilities, people coming out of homelessness, a variety of things. But behind all of that, and the primary driver of affordable housing in the United States, is what's called the low-income housing tax credit. And the low-income housing tax credit essentially is a federal program that's administered by the states and tries to be responsive to local policy and local priorities with those scarce resources. And so what happens is the Treasury Department, and this is part of the 1986 tax reform under President Reagan, it's actually just celebrated its 30th year. Tax credits are awarded to each state, and then the state allocates those tax credits to projects and communities that are developed. And in return for the most competitive applications on a scoring methodology and for setting those units aside as affordable for at least 30 years, those are awarded tax credits. So we are a developer. We put together projects. We make those applications. We compete in a fiercely competitive market for those. And then our projects are awarded credits. We sell those credits to corporations, and they're syndicated, it's called, to corporations, major banks, insurance companies, Google, Verizon, Berkshire Hathaway. For a while, Warren Buffett was a big investor and still has been in low-income credits. Sell them to large corporations that have a big tax liability, and they receive a tax credit every year for a 10-year stream. We receive an investment in return for those credits and what we sell them for that goes into the project, and in affordable housing is responsible for anywhere from 60% to 80% of the cost of that housing. And so it's a very substantial resource, and basically it's the largest and most widespread resource that the United States has for funding affordable housing.
Wow. So you talked about who's buying these credits. I assume they're sold at a discount, right? That's it's not a dollar-for-dollar, dollar-for-dollar transaction.
Well, that's interesting. They are sold based on, there is some discount for what's called the time value of money, but they also, the investor actually takes an ownership stake in the project during the at least a 15-year period that what's called the initial compliance period. So they also receive tax losses as a partner, and real estate tax losses, and they could receive some income both on an ongoing basis or at the end of the transaction. And so in some cases, credit pricing actually exceeds a dollar per credit. And in the most recent cycle, as the economy has run up and the demand for those have run up, they were trading north of $1.10 at some point. That sounds counterintuitive, but if you add up all the benefits and a tax-based return, investors can make that worthwhile. Additionally, banks and insurance companies have a community reinvestment obligation. And so what they found is the best vehicle to make substantial community investments is through the low-income housing tax credit, because it's a very well-known, sure program, and it's long-term, and they can make big investments at a time. And so that helps them a great deal. So partners and investors in us are people like Wells Fargo, SunTrust, Bank of America, they will be very competitive in bidding for those credits.
Well, let me ask you this, because as a developer, then do you have to pay attention to the market? Because that might be an indicator of how much are you going to get in terms of investors buying into what you all want to do? Because you look at the Great Recession, which we just had, were you even starting any projects when that bubble burst?
Yes. Well, very much so. The market matters at all levels for us. It matters in the tax credit market because depending on the economy, depending on what people think about the future, they're going to have more or less demand for those credits. That's been manifested very recently. Probably nobody's hardly heard about this, but the tax credit market dropped about 15 or 20% because of the prospect of President Trump and the Republicans in tax reform. And so all of a sudden, people running their financial models at a 35% tax rate are running them at a 15 or a 20% tax rate, which translates to a lower pricing on the credits. Now, we're hopeful that that will settle out and the demand will return at the levels it was, because nothing's happened with construction pricing to drop it. So right now, developers like us have tax credits that were awarded. All of a sudden, the price is going to be lower, but the construction costs continue to increase. So it's a bit of a challenge.
But is there a sense of urgency, particularly with those projects that you have started already, to make sure they stay on task, because there is a new administration and you don't know what's going to happen globally because all of the other issues with China or oil or what have you? So is there a sense of, let's get this done and let's let's get people in these developments?
Well, for us as a developer and an owner, and with all the obligations that we sign up for with these partnerships, yes, there's always a sense of urgency. All those factors come into play. But one of the beauties of the tax credit program is it puts the obligation on the private sector to maintain to meet all those timetables, to maintain affordability for the long term, and to ensure that the project is financially viable through a 30-year period. Otherwise, there's a substantial recapture that would happen for the investor. And, of course, the investor passes that risk along to us as the developer. And so we have a very long-term incentive to make sure that they maintain very high quality and they're affordable over that period.
Let's step back to Mechanicsville Cityside as an example. If the house that I toured cost $240,000 all in, that's construction, land, everything, $240,000 was the price tag, how much of a tax credit on kind of a per house basis might come back to your company?
Well, that particular project had a maximum allocation that the state will give. It had an allocation of $950,000 of annual tax credits for 10 years. So you take that and multiply that out, and that's $9.5 million. Additionally, Georgia has a state tax credit program that mirrors the federal tax credit program, which is a very substantial statement by the state of their priority of affordable housing. It's comparable to the movie tax credit in terms of the impact to the state.
But you don't have to put a logo of George and the peach on a house.
That's not part necessarily, of the, that's but part we of the... do. We have great partners at the state, so we do put them prominently on the signs and give them all the credit we can. But that is an additional multiplier on top of that. So all told, of that $18 million cost, in that particular case, probably $14 to $15 million of the cost is covered by the sale of those tax credits, both to state investors and to federal investors.
So more than three quarters of the cost of that house could be tax credit related,
yes,
paid for through those.
And the reason for that is if those houses were built to cost and we went ahead and sold them, we'd have to sell them at a profit over the cost of that $200,000+. Or we'd have to rent them at a level that is much higher than the levels they're rented at. They're rented to persons at or below 60% of the area median income. So that means a family of four, that's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $30,000 to $35,000. That's a lot of the workforce who is in the trades or in service work, things like that. And so that's the purpose of it. It allows for very affordable housing to be built in locations that are close to jobs, close to services. And in some cases, it's serving a particular population like elderly or people that are transitioning out of homelessness, things like that.
And let's talk about what the definition of affordable housing is. Mm-hmm. If you're a resident of the city of Atlanta and you want to move into one of these new communities that is based on income, what are we looking at in terms of that picture?
Well, if you're utilizing the low-income housing tax credit, the units that are built with the low-income housing tax credit need to be rented to people who are at or below 60% of the area median income. And based on that, HUD sets rent rates based for every metropolitan area based on what would be affordable to you at that income for your rent plus your utilities. And so that's the basis. Those are statutory rents that we cannot rent for more than that. And also the individual, when they move in, has to be at or below that level of income. So we have to do a lot of income and income certification and things like that as part of the rental. And there's a substantial ongoing compliance component of that to make sure that the objectives by which the credits were awarded are being maintained.
And I believe the average household income for the city of Atlanta, if you're a resident, is something like $55,000. So Rosa's pointing at me.
Yeah, point, because you just took my question. I was going to say, Jim, I'm gonna get you on this. Do you know what the real medium household income for Georgia is?
And
Jim,
am I right, 55?
Well, Jim, according to this website, U.S. was 55,000 in 2015.
53.
Georgia was 51. Atlanta, 60,000. But these are 2015 numbers.
Okay. True. So even playing with those, let's say $60,000, 60%, that's going to be what, $46,000?
Yeah, 60% of that would be 36, I think. Excuse me on the math.
But buggering it all up today.
But that's for a family of four. If you're a family of two, the median is a lower number. And actually, the median household incomes that matter for the tax credit program are based on the metropolitan statistical area. So it's all of the 23-county metro area. And that number in 2016 was right around 67.5. It's actually dropped. It dropped from the post-recession years for a number of years. So for us, that actually meant the rents we could charge on those units were dropping. Mm-hmm. But it's started to stabilize.
So the rent on one of these houses, let's say the one in the Cityside project, for that household would, what, be about $800?
It'd probably even be less than that, because what is factored in is what they can afford at 30% of their income at that level. And then you subtract out the cost for utilities. And there's what's called a utility allowance that is allocated in our communities. In those communities, residents will pay for their water and sewer and power. But the rent will be reduced by what is the expected cost of utilities for that unit. And so the utilities are factored in, because your true cost of living somewhere is your rent plus your utilities. And I would argue it's actually your transportation costs as well, which is one of the reasons to locate in Mechanicsville and invest there, because it's very close to jobs, very close to transit, and as opposed to driving until you can afford it. It's also a neighborhood in need of revitalization. Mm-hmm. So this project was an example of the state having an initiative, the city having an initiative, and then they came to us and we responded to that as a partner and implementer to put this together, because they wanted to see the tax credit used as something that could revitalize a single-family neighborhood that had really been struck by the foreclosure crisis. And then they also agreed that ultimately the neighborhood wanted to see home ownership there. But in 2011-12, when this first was conceived, there wasn't a market for that. So that's the rationale for eventually turning it into lease to purchase.
The voice you hear is Jim Grawley. He's the president and chief operating officer of Columbia Residential. And we're talking about how tax credits create affordable housing opportunities. And we threw out a lot of numbers here. You know, Jim's a numbers guy. You're a numbers guy. But someone listening says, that's great. And we've talked about numbers for everybody else. But Mr. Columbia Residential, y'all a developer. And you focus on low and moderate income housing, but you're not a nonprofit. So, my nephew would say, how you make your money?
Well, we are a mission-driven for-profit company. And my partner, Noel Khalil, founded Columbia. Actually, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary this mm-hmm. year, which is fantastic. And we've been blessed to, we're both people of faith and people who believe in the mission of affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to create over 7,500 units of affordable housing in that time. And 55 communities. But the way we make money in this business, you don't make the big pops, like you buy the land right and you flip it at the right time. You can be successful and earn a good living at it by a whole bunch of small successes, by year after year maintaining the communities at a very high quality, by hitting all your marks on development, by making sure those properties continue to thrive and be in a lot of demand over a long period of time. And that's so it's more blocking and tackling and doing the basics than it is hitting the right time of the market or that sort of thing. And there's a big trade-off on what you return, because you're asking for a lot of the public mm-hmm. dollar. And so there's a lot of restrictions on what you can earn. There's a lot of payback, we take very seriously paying back those obligations. When the city or the state makes loans to our projects, we treat them like we do loans from a commercial bank. And that has fostered for us a desire for public entities and partners, nonprofits and for-profits, to work with us, because we try to be very good partners.
And Jim, here's something we talk about a lot on this program, which is about perception. People have perceptions of public transportation, who rides it.
Yes.
People have perception of low-income housing. And then when they hear affordable housing, they think those two are interchangeable. What is your definition when it comes to what should be affordable housing and low-income housing in terms of, are they really interchangeable here?
Well, I think I understand your question, but I think, of course, affordability is in the eye
Everybody
of the individual.
Everybody wants affordable housing.
Yes. And so the purpose that I believe you can stand behind on affordable housing as a citizen and a taxpayer and a resident of the city is that, one, we're meeting the needs of people who otherwise could not afford housing, people that are elderly. There's a huge swath of the United States who has worked their entire lives, is on a very low fixed income, in many cases just on Social Security. And housing for them is a real challenge. So we have 18 senior communities that we have built and manage, and there's just incredible demand for that. Serving people with disabilities. Georgia has deinstitutionalized a lot of people in the past several years, and there's a huge need for housing and mainstreaming people into housing that's affordable for people that have disabilities and may not be able to earn what it takes to pay for that housing. For families, it's housing people who can't otherwise pay for it. Secondly, it's locational, because if we put all the affordable housing in South Coweta County far enough that you can afford the land, people have to get to work, and there's a lot of jobs in downtown Atlanta and the north side of town and things like that. And so locating people's housing near jobs, near education, near services, that makes for a better community. So that's part of the public purpose that people are trying to do. There's been a tremendous amount of research you may have seen recently about outcomes for children and about whether they live in a place that is walkable, whether they live in a place that is accessible to good schools, and how they do in places that are isolated and all low income versus how they do in places that are mixed income. So one thing about Columbia that we really specialize in is what we call mixed income housing. So our developments, the scattered site in Mechanicsville is an exception, but most of our developments have a mix of market rate, affordable, and then some very low-income housing that may be units for the Atlanta Housing Authority or one of the other housing authorities that we partner with. And we believe that healthy communities have a mix of incomes, and that also meets a public purpose.
And closer look toward a facility right now that's being renovated. It's a senior community
yes.
in the Midtown area, and we'll
Great.
Have that next week here on Closer Look.
That's Great. At what, the corner of Juniper and 10th, I
mm-hmm.
believe?
Absolutely.
One of the hottest kind of blocks in the entire
yes.
city from a real estate perspective. So it's interesting to see that as a model for affordability.
We're blessed to be the partners with the Atlanta Housing Authority developing that, so I'm glad you could see that.
As we wrap up here, when someone says low-income housing, there's probably an image that comes to mind. If you saw the Mechanicsville Cityside project, I think that it might be quite different than many
yes.
people's image. Talk about what you see low-income housing looking like from your view.
Well, just speaking to that image at first, there was a period of time where the federal government was the primary developer of affordable housing, as federally owned and federally managed, and there was a certain look that those communities have, and you can probably pick them out when you drive by them, and that's still implanted in a lot of people's mind. What we believe in our company is that the housing should be beautiful, that everybody, regardless of income, should live in a place that has beauty and they can take pride in. We see people respond emotionally and physically to their surroundings, to greenery, to beauty. Additionally, it helps the issue of NIMBYism, because people are concerned about, they think it's going to look like this, they think it's going to be poorly managed, and all of a sudden that's going to be next to my house and it's going to kill my property values, right? And so...
And just want to say NIMBY, not in my backyard.
Yes,
right.
Excuse me,
that's
another
right.
acronym.
Sure.
But so by building high quality, one, you want it to last for the long term. Also, you want it to be an enhancement. So in neighborhoods like the Edgewood community, the Mechanicsville community, West Highlands around the city, our developments have been instrumental in the neighborhoods revitalizing, because of the level of quality. And people will drive up and say, can I buy one of those townhomes? And we're like, well, they're actually affordable. But you may, in some cases, there's some market rate units. But, you know, for instance, in Edgewood, we built a lot of infill, very affordable townhomes, knowing that the market was going to change there. And now townhomes are being built next to that are $500,000 and up.
And businesses are coming into that area because of the development. Is that true?
It is. But a couple of things happen. One is you have to get ahead of it. And so the fact that our partners and the city had the vision to invest there, those units are for 30 years will always remain affordable. And they're owned by a foundation, so they'll even be maintained beyond that. But so otherwise, people that were living there would have been priced out. Because if the market becomes a $500,000 market, nobody's going to take the hit on that and give that up. So you have to get ahead of the gentrification curve and anticipate that, and then you can maintain that long-term affordability. So people can stay in Edgewood that are seniors, were raised in that community, even while the community comes up a lot in price.
Put another barbecue place over there, Jim. Jim Growley has been our guest. He's the president and chief operating officer of Columbia Residential. We've been talking about how tax credits and private-public partnerships work to create affordable housing. It's part of our affordable housing series, ongoing affordable housing series here on Closer Look. Jim, thanks for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate you covering this.
Absolutely.
Thank you.